Okay, it's about the time for us to get started. So welcome everybody. Thanks you all for coming here. My name is Matthias Wolnick. I'm a program manager in the file server team. And I'm going to give you guys an overview of what is dynamic access control. So basically I want to achieve two big things here. I want you guys to leave here with an idea of what dynamic access control actually is. That is the end-to-end sort of story. I'm not going to go into very technical details, but I'll give you a nice sampling. I will have a deep dive talk, hour after this talk ends, that will go into a lot more technical detail, and I will try and explain things at a level that hopefully will satisfy everybody. And of course, I want to really show you guys how you guys can use dynamic access control to solve the information compliance, the data leakage problems, and the general data compliance problem. Now let's start with some basics. Who here has heard of dynamic access control before? Well, a good portion, so you know a little bit already. Okay, hopefully this won't be too much review, but still, it'll be a little bit. So let's talk about what this is. So we started this basically looking at a problem on file servers that we have today. We realized that people have a distinct need to deal with the question of who can access my data? How do I prove that people have access that they should have? And how do I make that all manageable? Today we rely very heavily on groups, and groups are a very nice, well-tested, long-term, been used for a long term now. They're known. They also have a whole bunch of known problems associated with them. So how do we deal with that? And of course, in the end, we have a compliance problem. We need to protect our sensitive information. We need to adhere to a series of regulatory requirements. And how do we deal with all that when it comes to access control? So let's talk about some concepts that are pretty prevalent throughout all of the dynamic access control discussions. There's four big ones. Data classification. We need to understand what data we have. We need to understand what data is sensitive, what data contains information that is, you know, related to a governance requirement, some kind of law. So we need to be able to classify our documents. We need to be able to automatically do this. We then need to worry about auditing. Who accessed what? When did they do it? Should they have done this? Should they have done this from the machine that they used? And we want to be able to control that kind of thing centrally. Thirdly, we'll talk about expression-based access controls. And this is something that where we introduce a whole bunch of power in extending the model of the ACLs, of the access control list that we have today. And last but not least, we will talk about encryption. Because once data leaves an organization, it doesn't matter what kind of policy you had inside the organization, the file is out. So we need to think about how do we secure it after the file has left the organization. And encryption comes into the picture there. So let's talk about data classification. So in general, we find that files get classified in a number of ways commonly. We know that people create project shares. A great way to classify files is to, well, classify the share and say everything that goes into the share must be part of this project. So we have the ability to classify files by location. So that's a good concept. We need to be able to classify the files automatically. Manual classification is a wonderful concept and is a vital piece of the equation. But if you have a few terabytes of existing data, telling someone, please go manually classify all those existing files, is something that just will not happen, right? If you tell the administrator, he has no idea. If you tell your users, please go classify all the files that you guys created in the last 10 years, they'll tell you, okay, so when do I start my actual work again, my real job again, 6 months from now? It's just not realistic. So we need to be able to deal with both manual classification as well as automatic classification by such things as what kind of file is it? What's in this file? And we'll talk a little bit about data classification toolkit and how it all relates to this thing. So let's talk about classification. Demos are always much more exciting to watch than watching me show slides. So let me make sure I have the right mouse here. All right, so given we have a file server. Now I'm showing you a file server, a 2012 file server here. These machines, then, we'll be showing you, happen to be built on the consumer preview, not the pre-release, whatever it's called. So there are some small changes that you will notice if you look at the Lewis builds. But for most of what I'm going to show you, it's pretty much exactly the same. So this is good. So classification. When it comes to classification, I will spend a lot of time in the file resource manager, file server resource manager. Now, I know this is a high resolution. We will be using Zoomit extensively. But for now, the file server resource manager basically is the place where we control things like quotas and file screens and reporting. But we also control all the classification capabilities here. Now, first of all, we need to define which properties we want to classify files with. So on this machine, we have a few properties here. We have a department property, we have an impact property, information type property. We have a few properties we've defined. Creating property, it's pretty straightforward. We right-click create property. Let's see here. We give it a name, and we give it a type. So let me type them in for you. Let's say secrecy. Secrecy. And we pick a type. Pretty straightforward. The types of properties that we support are a strict subset of SharePoint. So nothing too complicated, nothing too crazy there. Once a property has been defined, we've defined a schema. We haven't changed anything on the file server. All we've said, this is how we tag files in general. We can then, once we've done that, go into a folder on my server. So for example, this department share, I can go in and say, right-click properties, and go to this classification tab that we now have in Server 2012, as well as in Windows 8 Client. And we can say, well, this is a finance folder. Let's make sure this folder is marked with the finance department. Now, when I put a new file into the finance department, that property gets inherited to the file. If I take a file that came out of, say, the engineering folder and was therefore marked as engineering, and put it into my finance folder, it will stay marked engineering. So the properties stay attached to the file as long as the file stays on NTFS, and for Word files much further than that, or Office files much further than that. But the inheritance of properties only happens when the property hasn't already been assigned for that file in the first place. So location-based classification, very simple to do, very easy to do, and as long as you have permissions to change the security of the folder, you can assign the classification property to a folder that gets inherited down to the files. That means if you are the data owner, the person who owns a share, you have permission to say, this is my default classifications that should be on every file that gets put into my share. It does not require an admin to make happen. Now, as I said earlier, manual classification is good, and I showed you how manual classification works. Content classification is a necessity as well. So we can go into the file server resource manager and go to the classification rules section and create a classification rule. Now here we have one predefined, which I'll read it to you because it's not that exciting to zoom into. It says mark files with credit card as high impact. Every rule has a scope. In this case, it has a scope of D. Well, that's a good scope. It's a whole volume. And uses a classification mechanism. In this case, it uses the content classifier. Now, the content classifier actually extracts text from files and searches for strings or patterns in that text. Now, in this case, it searches for this wonderful regular expression. Whoa, that's zooming. Which is actually 4 digits, -4 digits, 4 digits, and 4 digits. So it's a credit card number. A simple, basic one, but it's good enough for demo purposes at this point. So we can identify credit card numbers. And if we find such a credit card number, then we can go in and say, well, this property, impact, should be marked as high, which is somewhat readable. So effectively, we said if the credit card number exists in the file, it should be marked as a high-impact file. Now, with that, we can now go in and take a file. Let's see if this is the right one, such as the credit card file right here. And we can take it and put it into a folder on my D drive. Let's just put it right here. Now, what the file server will then do is we'll identify that there is a new file that was created, that is, or was modified, that is put underneath the scope of a classification rule, and goes and classifies that file automatically. Now, this does wait a few seconds, just in case you were actually still modifying the file and you haven't actually finished copying the whole thing over. But, you know, just in case. So in that time now, if I go and click on the classification tab, and everything worked, we see now the file was classified as impact high. If
I take that file and move it under finance, I'm actually going slightly off script, so let's see if this all worked correctly. Go to classification. Did not. It did something bad. That's okay. The file gets classified based on the content, and we'll get classified based on the location in a second here. And the file classification will then be retained as the data moves around the infrastructure, the file server, other file servers, etc. Which means we can then use it for a series of policies at a later time. But we'll get to those. Let's talk about expression-based access control. We'll talk about classification, identifying sensitive data. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk about access controls as they exist today on your existing systems in 2008 and before and even 2002. Most organizations have a problem of this sort. Say you have a multinational organization. You operate in, say, 50 countries. Each one of them has a set of shares. All right, so we have 50 shares. To properly control access to that file, those shares, we have to now create 50 groups. Pretty straightforward. If we then have, say, 20 departments that actually have to manage files on these shares, that keep files on these shares, spread around 50 countries, we now need 1,000 different groups just to maintain access at the right level for each individual group on each individual share. This is getting kind of a lot. Matters get worse once we have things like sensitive content, high impact content. Well, now we need 2,000 groups. This is getting to be a lot of groups. And it's a real problem. Not only do we have to create 2,000 groups, we're talking token bloat issues, we're talking trying to make sure that everybody's in the right groups. I switch teams. Which groups do I need to leave? Which groups do I need to now join? This is a real problem that people have today, and it is a common issue. So what do we do to fix that? We go and talk about expression-based ACLs. More demos. So what we can do, given my file server again, I can go in to, say, my country's share. And let's go to, well, Germany, we're in Europe, should work. And here we can go and look at, say, the finance folder. So this is the same model we just talked about, right? Country shares for individual departments, etc. Here I can go into the security tab. And we can start talking, looking at the security just like we did before. And you'll see this is the new ACL editor, which is slightly small up on the screen, I realize. This is the new ACL editor in Windows 8 and Server 2012, for those who have not seen it yet. It is slightly enhanced. It has a few new capabilities, and we'll go into a number of them in a moment here. So first thing I've got to do on the system, of course, is, well, I don't want to inherit my permissions anymore, so let's disable inheritance. And let's take those authenticated users, which was a nice idea, but that's not really right. I don't want authenticated users to have access. I want people who are in, you know, this was the finance in Germany. Right? Those are the groups I want access. So traditionally what I would do is I would remove this and add a German finance group. But instead what I want to do is I can go back into this and say, well, I'll let authenticated users in as long as the user is a member of the, let's see here, Germany security group. So I'll simply type in the Germany security group. And the user should be a member of that group. Oh, I typed it wrong. Germany Security Group. Tell me I didn't spell it wrong. Security Group. I know I did something. I apologize. That's what happens when you spell things. German Security Group. See? And I'm even German, so. There we go. That's much better. In addition to that, we also want to make sure that the user is a member of the finance department security group. So now what I've effectively done is I've said any authenticated user can come in, but they have to be a member of both of these groups. No longer is there a question of or between each individual ACE, but each ACE can contain a condition that takes advantage various groups the user may be part of. And if you notice, our expressions can be pretty complex. We can add a series of condition, conditions and an OR between them, and even create groups so that we have, you know, these two ANDed and, or that one, right? So we have a lot more flexibility suddenly. As a result, if we allow such conditions, in this case, country and a member of the finance department and a member of the has access to sensitive data, well, I no longer need my 2,000 groups. What I need is my 50 groups for countries, my 20 groups for department, and my one group for security, for sensitive documents. And that's it. And pretty straightforward. The same ACLs still. You still have ACLs. We haven't replaced anything. All the existing stuff still works. But now you don't need nearly as many groups. No longer do you have to figure out, oh, there was a Germany finance group I had to remove him from. No, he moved from Germany to Ireland. Well, let's move him from the Germany group to the Ireland group. Done. So that's the basic concept of expression-based ACLs. But then we said, let's take this a step further. If we have this concept of expressions, well, we have information about files. We know all kinds of things, right? This concept of sensitive files in a location is great, but we just saw classification. We know we can tag files based on if they're sensitive or not, based on if they contain personal information, based on all kinds of things. Why don't we make that information accessible in our expressions, in our ACL expressions? In the same manner, we know a lot about users thanks to Active Directory. Active Directory keeps much of our information and is oftentimes well managed. We have procedures around how to move someone from department to department. Somebody switches managers. Well, we go and update Active Directory. This is information that we can use to make access decisions if we have made it available right. So what we did is we make that information available as a user claim. We took the existing model of claims and incorporated it into the Windows platform. At the same time, the question came up, well, what if I'm using my laptop, my personal laptop, versus my corporate laptop? Shouldn't that make a difference of what I have access to? Well, of course it should. So we said, well, let's make device claims a reality too. We have descriptions of objects, of devices in Active Directory. So in the same way, we can go into Active Directory and create a claim for computers that says this is a managed device, for example, and make that information accessible when I'm creating my expressions in an ACL. Once we've done all that information, once I've made that available, suddenly our ACL system can be much simpler, right? We can express the problem we had a moment ago, countries and departments, in a much simpler ACL. We can simply say, users have access to files if their country corresponds to the file's country, if their department corresponds to the file's department. And also, as a result now, no longer do you need to have an ACL that's specific to each individual folder or share. This is the same ACL that's true for all those shares. It doesn't really make a difference even which file server they're on. It's true for the organization, or for a large part of the organization, at least. So if we can define an ACL in that form, why don't we define them centrally? Why don't we make them, publish them once, create them once, and then publish them out to all of the various file servers from there? And this is where a central access policy came from. And this is what I'll show you. So now that we're talking Active Directory, which I know a lot of you guys want to see, Active Directory is good stuff. So let's talk about central access policy. First of all, we're using the Active Directory Administrative Center, which has been vastly updated for this release. So you'll note along the way, if you've seen some of these things, that everything we're doing here can be done in PowerShell, and the Active Directory Administrative Center will show you how to do so if you turn the right options on. For the purpose of this demo, I'm going to stick with the standard interfaces. So now we have a dynamic access control node in the Administrative Center, where various parts of this will show up. I'll go into a few of them in this demo, and I'll talk about more of them in the deep dive later. So first things first. We talked about classification properties earlier. Well, it's not necessarily only one server that tracks the impact of files or the department of files. It's every server or maybe most parts of an organization. So we realized we need to be able to define them globally for the organization. So what we can do, first of all, is we can go into the resource property node, and we can see here that there are three properties defined here that are enabled, these first three. Zoom. a country property, an impact property, and a department property. These three properties will be used to describe data throughout my organization. Now you'll note there's a whole bunch of properties underneath it that are kind of grayed out. Those are all disabled. We actually ship a taxonomy inbox in Active Directory to start help you figure out where to start labeling files or how to start labeling files. This taxonomy is not intended to be authoritative or complete. It's meant as a starting point. It covers many of the common scenarios that corporations face. Medium size, big size, doesn't really make that much of a difference. But everything in here can be modified, can be updated to what makes sense to your specific use case, and can be extended or not used completely. These properties were actually originally defined by the Data Classification Toolkit, which is a free download we published for Server 2008 R2. And they were created based on the top 5 or 6 governance documents that we found. And we looked at which metadata needed to be tracked for those documents and harmonized that taxonomy. Added some common things such as department and made it available for 2008 R2. In Server 2012, it's part of the box. All you have to do is say, I need this property, and it will be used by your file servers and for your clients for manual classification as well. So we've defined these three properties. In the same manner, we have to look at user claims, claim types. Now, in this machine, we have, in this setup, we have two claims defined, a department and a company claim. Each of these claims, once it loads, for a second, is backed by, is backed by an AD attribute. Of course, in this case, it's not shown, but still. So we can use any Active Directory attribute for a user and surface it as a claim, as a user claim, that can then be used for the construction of a central access policy. That means anything that's in your Active Directory, you can use to create a claim. We don't provide any in the box, but you know what's available in your Active Directory environments, and you can surface any of those things up. There is a talk by Brian Poole on best practices and things like that, and how Microsoft IT deployed dynamic access control. He has a section in there where he talks about how to create good claims. It's worth a listen, at least. Now, once we've defined these claims and resource properties, we can then go and define central access policies. Now, central access policies are a little bit more complicated, but one of the basic things here is we can define these what we call a central access rule. Now, here we have what's called the department file access rule, which has a series of permissions. And we'll zoom in. And the permission is the following. You see the standard owner rights, administrator rights, system rights. But then, just like before, we had authenticated users are allowed to access this data or modify this data only if the user department equals the resource department. Now, this should look somewhat familiar. The UI looks very similar to the high-level ACL editor. And if I start editing this thing, this will look very familiar. It's actually the exact same interface. So if you know how to use the ACL editor locally, this was not far from there. It's very straightforward, very simple to modify. Now, there's one difference here that we don't have locally, and that is this concept of targeting. Target resource. You notice that it says this applies only if the resource already has a department property. So if the property doesn't have, if the file doesn't have a department property attached to it, this central access rule will not apply to that file. That allows us to target our central access rule and make our policies much simpler. Because think about it, effectively, what we'd do here is we'd say, well, if we didn't have this target and the file didn't have a department attached to it, then you wouldn't have access to that file because, well, your department is not the same as the file's department. The department of the file is empty. So only people who don't have a department could access it. So it's important to note that resource targeting here is actually a really important concept. Once we've done this, once we've constructed such a central access rule, and we create a central access policy from that, we can go into the file server, and we can go to, say, our department shares, right-click properties, security, back to the advanced Acrobat Editor. And you'll note there's a new tab here called Central Policy. I'll zoom in here. And here we can define which CentralX policy applies to this folder. And the only policy in this case is defined as the organizational access policy, which includes this departmental file access rule that we saw a moment ago. So we can actually see what the effect of that central access policy is. Note that central access policies are pushed to the file server by a group policy. That means if the policy is not pushed to the file server, it's not available as a choosable option in this dialog. But what it also means is, in the past, your file server admin got an email, said, you must be compliant to HIPAA and PCI. Go do it. It's not really an option. The other alternative was, here's a book of how you have to adjust your ACL and your processes and how you create new shares. Also complicated. With Server 2012 and Dynamic Access Control, the email says, apply the organizational access policy. I apply the finance access policy. And the file server admin is done. The person who creates the file, that policy in Active Directory is someone who does spend the time to understand the legal requirements and generates it once centrally for all of the file servers in the organization. So let's go. Cancel out of those. Back to some slides. So what is CentralX policy? It's a couple of pieces. We define resource properties. This is resource property definitions in Active Directory. We define user claims in property. We configure central access policy and push those out to file servers by group policy. On the file server, we classify information and we assign a central access policy to shares. Then at runtime, user access is evaluated. You know, I just realized I never showed you guys that it actually works. Somebody actually want to see how this works? That this actually does do something? I think it might be useful, right? Let's show you guys that it does something. That's worth it. So we assigned this. Did we assign it? Did I cancel out of it? Let's make sure it's assigned. CentralX, no, it's not assigned. We'll assign it real quick. All right, let's go to a client. Here we have a client. And you'll notice that Who Am I now has this nice new switch called slash claims. Tells me something about your user, your logged in as. In this case, we can see that the department is operations, and the company is Fabricam. Well, if I go to my department shares, which I'm already at, and I am an operations user, so if I go to operations, everything works just fine. Wonderful. If I now go to that finance folder that we tagged as finance earlier, however, I no longer have access. Now, if you remember what happened when you don't have access to a share on older versions of the operating system or on most other systems, it says something on the order of, go talk to your admin. You don't have access to this thing. I don't know how it is in most organizations. We actually tried this at Microsoft. We went and, you know, found a share we didn't have access to and then called help desk and said, okay, guys, we don't have access. We'd like access, please, which is an interesting experiment just to try out, because then that went through a couple levels and in the end they said, yeah, I don't know if you should have access or not. No. And that was the end. That's not useful. That's not a useful experience. The file server admin almost never knows if you, random user Bob, should have access to the share or not. Why would he? He doesn't even know what data's on this share. Maybe the high level, but really what's on the share? It's data from the admin's point of view. And he's the person who has to make a choice, should he let you in or not. In the end, the person that should let you just make a decision is the owner of the share, the data owner. So what we've done is we create a new access denied assistance experience with Windows Client 8, with Windows 8 Client. So what we can do is on the file server, we can configure a custom error message, a custom access denied message that will be displayed on the Windows 8 Client when the user tries to access a share that they do not have access to or a file that they do not have access to. So this can say pretty much anything. And yes, we support HTTP links in these messages. So in other words, if you have a web service, self-service model to allow getting access to a share, you can put a link in here and say, go through this process and request access. If you need to go to FIM to join a group, put a link to the FIM site in there. But we take it a step further. In Server 2012, we now have a concept of who is the owner of a folder. Who is the person to go contact about issues with this folder? And if that person is defined, well, then we can go even easier. I can actually, as a user, go and say request access, request assistance. Now, this can be disabled, don't get me wrong. But here, a user can give a business need, a reason why they need access to this server, this share, and an email will be sent to the owner of the share saying, user Tim, try to access the finance share. Here's information about the user. Here's, you know, information about the file or folder that they were trying to access. You should make a decision if they should have access or not, and then contact Tim. Now, what does a file server admin do at that point? Actually, not a file server, a share owner do at that point. Well, a share owner goes, I don't know who Tim is or why he doesn't have access. What happened? Well, in that case, what the file server, the share owner can do is he can go to his share, right-click finance, go to properties, go back to the ACK editor, and go to this effective access tag. And I'll zoom in a second. What I can do here is I can say, for Tim, what access does Tim have? And what access is he denied? And why is he denied this access? In this case, he's denied everything by the central access policy, department file access rule. But if it was the share policy, then it would also say the share policy is blocking him. If it was the file policy, it would say the file policy is also blocking him. So we now know why that person doesn't have access. And furthermore, you see this says that their device, select the device, and add new user claim. We can actually experiment by changing the information we know about the user to see what would happen if we gave him this new user claim. In the release preview, there's also another link that says, well, select a group. What if we add him to this group? What access would he have then? So we can actually experiment and learn based on everything, all the information available in the ACL editor of what we have to change to get that person access. And we can make a decision should that happen or not and make those changes happen. So it's a much improved experience from go contact your admin. Now, from here, let's keep going. Let's go back to the very beginning. If we don't, taking today, 2008 R2 and before, we don't have conditional expressions. We have mass quantities of ACLs for that scenario we had in the beginning. We have 2,000 ACLs. We have 2,000 groups to go along right alongside it. Not very good, but all right. With groups, with conditional expressions, we have a much simplified system. We don't need nearly as many groups anymore. The system becomes much simpler to manage already. But with user claims, we have a single ACL that's centrally managed and three claims to go along with it. And so on, three resource properties as well. Much simpler, no groups to maintain suddenly anymore. And it's manageable centrally. So what happens when the data leaves the file server? Because, well, it's great, right? We have this cool file server protection thing now. But, you know, I have access to this file. I take it home with me on my USB stick. I hand it to my buddy. Well, dynamic access control protects files via ACLs on the file server, but not once it leaves the organization. For that, we need to talk about encryption. Right? What happens how do I encrypt the data as it leaves my organization? And how do I do it without having to ask every user to please encrypt all data that might be sensitive at some point? Because users tend to do things that makes their job easier, not things that are required and are complicated and make their life a little harder. So for that reason, we incorporate an automatic mechanism to encrypt files into the system, to automatically encrypt files based on their classification of data. So let's show you how that works. So going back to the file server resource manager. By the way, can everybody see what I'm doing, or am I not zooming enough? Zoom more. More zooming. A little bit more zooming. All right, a little bit more zooming. We'll do that. So here we have a file management task configured in the file server resource manager. Now, it has a name and all that, and we'll go into that. And I'll read the task name for you guys because it's not that exciting to read. It says RMS encrypt high impact files. Just as before, we have a scope on this thing. Folder D, Same scope as before, no difference. Now, what do we want to do with data on drive D? We want to RMS encrypt data on drive D. In this case, to the high impact documents template that I've predefined on the RMS server. But I don't want to encrypt everything. Encrypting everything is an option, fairly enough, right? You could encrypt every file in your organization. It does have some costs associated with it. It causes some extra process involved. So generally, we find it is preferential to encrypt the files that need encrypting, and maybe a bit more, but not to encrypt everything. So we want to say, let's only encrypt files where the impact property is high, and nothing else. So we can create this condition in a file management task to encrypt files that are impact equals high. Now, that's a nice concept, but what does it actually look like when that happens as a result? So we know our buddy Tim here has access to the operations department. And we have a file here that incorporates something that looks like a credit card number, a little bit at least. But it definitely matches the policy that we've configured to classify files as high impact data. So now we take this file. Come on, disappear. Don't close Word. And copy it into our operations folder. Now, just as before, the file server goes and sees, hey, new file, or hey, modified file. Let me go take a look at what this file is. And, you know, opens up the file, goes and searches it for credit card information. And in this case, we know it's credit card information inside it. So we'll find that and classify it. And this takes a couple seconds, as I said before, and you'll see it probably shouldn't suddenly shift to the very top. It takes about 10 seconds or so before we start looking at the actual file. And then we say, well, but we also have a policy that says impact files, high impact files, must be encrypted. So what we do now is, you notice it says 13 kilobytes? Not anymore. That file was automatically identified as a high impact file. And in this case, one that Tim shouldn't actually have access to. Bad Tim. But we automatically RMS encrypted the file. And if you had the right credentials, you could provide those. But we've automatically RMS encrypted the file as soon as the data was put onto a file server that was managed by the organization. No longer is it something that has to be done manually. It has to be remembered to be done. The organization can create a policy to automatically do the things that we need to do to stay compliant with our requirements. So that's good. Now, how do I deploy this across my servers? You'll note that the resource properties, the classification properties, were defined in Active Directory. You'll note that the user claims were defined in Active Directory. Central access policies were defined in Active Directory. But classification rules and file management tasks, I didn't do that in Active Directory. I did that in the File Server Resource Manager. So for those of you who've actually used the File Server Resource Manager before, you'll know that File Server Resource Manager configures one file server, or maybe one cluster, but one file server. That's not right. I want this policy deployed everywhere, right? I want this across my organization. How do I do that? Well, so we do provide some mechanisms for that. We have commandlets and all those good things, but we also updated the Data Classification Toolkit for Windows Server 2012. Now, Data Classification Toolkit comes with a whole bunch of good functionality. It came up with those classification property definitions initially. It comes with some classification rules. You don't want to define what a credit card number looks like? Well, the classification toolkit comes up with a small set of rules that does so for you. It's not everything, but it's a good starting point. But it goes further than that. It provides a whole bunch of other things. One thing, for example, is the question of how do I deploy this thing right? Well, what we do is we take a management client and a staging file server. We create an initial policy. Initial set of classification rules, initial set of file management tasks, etc. And once we've done that, we export that policy, that configuration, back to our management client, so we have it available, and we can then push that configuration out to all of our file servers, both Windows Server 2012 and Windows Server 2008 R2, for the parts that it supports, across the organization via group policy, or via commandlets, for that matter. So we can actually take a configuration that we know is good and push it out throughout a whole organization. For that matter, it also provides some really important functionality, and that is, well, FSRM, which also produces reports about how files were classified, for example, which files were encrypted. It goes, the Data Classification Toolkit provides tools to collect all that reporting information into a central reporting database that collects that aggregate data and makes it available for review so you can see, well, I have 15% of my organization's files on file servers are impact equals high. Or I actually don't have any PCI data or credit card data in my organization. This is the kind of thing that Data Classification Toolkit provides on top of what's already in the box. Important to note, this thing's free. You go to Microsoft.com and you go download it. Right? This is not something you have to go buy. But it provides some extra tooling to help you deploy and manage the system in production. Okay, so what happens if I actually get audited? How does this help me? Why is this better? Well, there's a few things. First of all, you have a central definition of what an access policy looks like. You can show, this is my access policy. We have reports to tell you where this policy is in use. To the Data Classification Toolkit, you can gather it all into one place. You have a lot of the information there. But even then, there is still the question, so who accessed my data along the way? Well, figuring out who accessed my data is actually kind of complicated. You tend to have, well, a lot of data that gets generated. And there's no really good way to, well, first of all, set up audit policies everywhere that are useful, and then gather all that data back together. And then once you have your massive mountain of data, figure out what's actually important, useful data that I can further analyze from there. So what we did is we extended the auditing mechanism that we have in Windows. We said if we can have expression-based access, why can't we have expression-based audit? Why can't we simply say, well, I don't care about auditing all file access to every file. I want to only audit file access to high-impact files, the stuff that matters. I don't care if people access, you know, Sue's recipe book or I don't know, Bob's laundry list, right? I care about my credit card information, my user information being accessed. That's the stuff I care about. So how do we do this? And of course, one really important thing is audit events are kind of sparse. There's not a lot of information in them. How do I make them useful? So one of the basic things is we extended audit events to actually have real information in them. We extended audit events to actually include the resource properties, the classification properties for the file that was accessed. So we can see somebody accessed a file that was marked as personal identifiable information and was a part of the finance department. Suddenly this is actual information we can use for our analysis. And yes, we will still be using audit tools and tools to gather information together, etc. But now we have a lot more information we can actually make use of. You notice also that, you know, we actually identify who access the data specifically. We identify what object is in there and all of the resource properties that go with it. Now let me show you real quick that this is actually how to do this. Just because, you know, we have a little bit of time. I figured you guys might want to see it. So what we'll do is we can actually define an audit policy on the file server itself. So we can go in and say for this department file share, I want to go to security. Security, I'm not going to zoom for all that. And you'll note that there is an audit tab. So let's go to the audit tab. Here, looks pretty much the same as the permissions tab. We can do the same kind of thing, and I can say, let's create an audit policy for authenticated users. Okay. And we can, first of all, we can define, do I want to audit success, failures for all files, this file, etc. And what kind of permissions I actually care about in the first place. And then you'll note, just like before, I can create a series of conditions, just like in the ACL editor itself. And say, well, I only want to audit people in the finance group. Or maybe people with the claim of finance. And maybe that's actually more important, people who are accessing high-impact data, but who are not full-time employees. Maybe I can find somebody who knows, identify someone who is looking for high impact data when they shouldn't be accessing it in the first place. So this is good. We can create a policy there. But that doesn't solve the problem. I have to create policies in every machine now. That's just not really useful either. Well, luckily, there's such a thing as group policy. So we can go into group policy, and here, under audit policies, you'll see global object access auditing at the very bottom here. And here we can then define a file system audit policy. So let's create a, do that real quick. All right, define this policy setting. And you'll note, it looks just like a moment ago. The same kind of thing. So I can do exactly the same thing we just did locally, but push this policy out via group policy. So that everywhere, this policy, the audit information will be gathered, and we can use standard audit tools, System Center, etc., to gather that data back together and get real reporting of how data was accessed and only for the data we actually care about. Oh, that was the wrong button, the wrong keyboard. Let's hit the that one and that one again. All right. So, central audit policy, real quick. We still use resource properties and user claims in Active Directory. That hasn't changed. Exactly the same thing. We use group policy to create a global audit policy that can be used everywhere. And note, in the past, the concept of a global audit, of an audit policy is nice because you could create an audit policy, but you turned on audit for the machine. Here we're saying we only turn on audit for a small part of the machine, small chunks of files. And we can define a series of global audit policies that work together. So we have one audit policy for high-impact files, another audit policy for PC for credit card information, etc. On the file server, we still have to classify files to identify that sensitive data. And at runtime, when users access data, we generate audit events. This is the security audit, the Windows security log, with more contextual information about who accessed this data, what was the data they were trying to access, etc. And of course, all of that can then be collected to a central location and generate reporting from that. So, group it all. We had four big concepts: classification, expression-based auditing, expression-based access controls, and encryption. I hope this all made sense at a high level, but we're not quite done yet. So we can show you that we can use dynamic access control for a whole bunch of scenarios just with what you have. But we do get a bunch of questions afterwards, because realistically, we're making a big shift. We're changing things for the better. We're taking what you have and enhancing it further. But it brings up really good questions that we turn to our partners to help answer, such as, how do I go from my 2,000 groups to this expression-based thing? It's a nice question, right? It does take some thinking, right? Okay, fair enough. You could spend the time, sit down, and figure this out. Of course you can. Take some effort. You have to go look at what you have and all those things. But there are definitely partners out there who will gladly help you figure this out for you and make your life easier. All right, good. Wonderful. So one of those partners is StealthBits. And for each partner that I will mention their links here as well. StealthBits actually does exactly that. They go in and analyze which groups you're using, actually using, what they're being used for, and come up with a proposed expression-based ACL. And then show you what would be the effect if you were to deploy that ACL, and as you deploy that central access policy, that expression-based ACL, what effect it has of who's using what groups, etc. And we'll tell you, this group is no longer actually being actively used. You can get rid of it. So there's a partner actually that helps you figure this thing out. That's nice. That's nice. But of course, then the question becomes, now how do I know exactly who has access to what? Because even if I tell you, central access policy, you know what's going on. You can identify how files are classified, etc. Somebody will still come and ask, so who has access to my information now? And you'll go and try and figure this out. And there are many ways of figuring this out. One partner who spent a lot of time figuring out what that means for dynamic access control is Gigi, who went in and created a system to identify who has access to what information across servers based on central access policies and their effects. slides will all be available later as well, just FYI. All right, good. But for example, I'm in the healthcare industry, or I happen to be processing a lot of credit cards. I need to be sure that I know I'm classifying my files correctly, because somebody's going to sue me or make me pay big fines if I don't have some way of proving that I did this right. Okay, I will tell you this. I don't have the pattern that is authoritative for credit cards. I just don't. I don't have that. And if I did, I'd probably get yelled at by legal if I told you exactly what it is, because then I'm liable. However, there's a whole bunch of partners out there who do understand these kind of things. There's partners out there who spend a lot of time in the DLP market figuring out these kind of questions. And we've worked with a series of them to integrate their classification capabilities into dynamic access control and the classification areas specifically. For example, WebSense and CA both have long history of great classification capabilities that are now available as extensions into the classification capability that is used by dynamic access control for access and audit. They both have their strengths, no question, and they have a series of tooling around them as well, and vertical knowledge that goes along with it. Data Global has done something slightly different in that respect. They went in and created a learning engine. They said, they basically identify given a document set and knowledge about how that document should be classified, they then use that information to classify more data going forward. So if you tell them, this is my financial data, this is what financial data looks like for us, they'll identify other financial data in the same manner. So we have a whole series of great classification partners that help with the classification question for a series of verticals or for custom applications. Okay. And we talked about encryption. We talked about RMS encryption a lot. RMS encryption is good stuff. It has certain limitations, such as it works for Office files by default. Well, what about you buy PDF files? Well, that's a bit of a problem. And then we saw those RMS templates. RMS templates work like the old ACL model, which is great. It has a whole bunch more permissions. You know, I don't have copy-paste permission. I don't have print permission. But it's still the old ACL model. With this new cool dynamic access control thing, how do I do the same kind of thing? Well, GigaTrust came in, who's been a partner around RMS for a long time, and extended the support that we have for encryption, for RMS encryption, to PDF files. And furthermore, they extended the RMS model to include central access policies. So if a file was under a central access policy when it got encrypted, that file then goes off to my buddy's laptop. When he tries to open that file, first, the central access policy will be evaluated before a key is returned to decrypt the file. So we've actually extended the system that way. And of course, one of the big questions that comes up every time I show this to someone. I have a SharePoint server. Now what? I have, you know, various other document repositories. Now what? And the answer from my point of view is central access policies are defined in Active Directory in a standard way. We make them easily accessible, easily available for any application that wants to consume and enforce them. We don't care which application does it. We make them available. There we go. In Windows Server 2012, the file server is the first application or workload to actively enforce central access policies. So the file server is what enforces them in Server 2012. All right, that's not necessarily good enough for some people because, well, you still have the SharePoint server. Now what do I do? All right, luckily we have partners who really think this is an important problem, and then they'd like to solve for you. All right, good, wonderful. Titus went in and created, well, central access policies for SharePoint. They take the same information that we use in central access policies and enforce them on your SharePoint library. They still look at classification. They still look at user claims, and they simply enforce the same level of concept there. Next Labs has a series of control mechanisms that they base around ExactML, if I remember correctly. Yes, ExactML. And they also integrated with the central access policies so that they can extend support for central access policies to other workloads that they support through their protection environments. In a similar manner, Axiomatics went in and created a mechanism to translate ExactML to central access policies and back. So we can actually use modeling tools to define policies figure out what they are, and deploy them in a standards compliant way through XACML. All right, audit. As I said earlier, we create all this cool audit data, and we have ways to save it. And yes, there are tools to help us gather back together. System Center is one of those. Both System Center and RSA have done something very interesting. They've started creating further analytics around the audit information that is now available due to the way we've done central access policies and the enhanced information available in audit events. So now we can do a much better analysis across the information that was gathered through the third-party tools that we have today already or that are in the market. So I've given you a little bit of overview of what we can do with DAC. I've told you a little bit about what our partners have done to answer the questions that we've gotten that we can't easily answer immediately. But what we have here overall, what we've done is we've reduced group complexity. We made this much simpler. We've simplified access control. We've tried to make life easier from a management point of view, from a governance point of view, from a compliance point of view. And we've tried to implement effective access control. In the past, people move around the organization. They still have access to all that information that they used to have. It's just not feasible. Here we have a system that gives us real access control that works with the business process in place that as people who are parts of the organization adhere to today. So with that, I've covered basically all the interesting pieces I wanted to talk about. There's a whole bunch more related content, including in about an hour or so. I'll be talking about details about implementation. I'll be showing a few demos only, but I'll be talking a lot more details on the technical side. So I would gladly share all of those. But in the meantime, we have a whole bunch more time than I expected, to be honest, to answer questions. So please, questions. Do we have microphones? No? Then I will ask. Repeat them. Please. Good question. So, if all we did was started with the expression-based ACLs and groups, like we did in the very beginning, would that work for Windows 7 clients? Yes. It would work for your Mac client as well, and for anything else that tried to access the files. Actually, to be more clear, dynamic access control, the central access policies, expression-based ACLs, audit, etc., will work regardless of the client being used. Does not make any difference whatsoever. The technical implementation underneath the hood to make that happen is something I'll talk about in the follow-on. I think he was first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, good features, but our customers use NetApp and EMC servers. Yeah, it's a good question. This is where I'll go back to the partner discussion, right? We built this, we put this information available in Active Directory to make available to partners, or to ourselves, to other applications. We may supply that capability in File Server. NetApp and EMC are both aware of this. We've talked to them, and it is up to them to decide if and when to adopt the model. In the meantime, there are partners who will probably be very interested in talking to you about how they can step in the meantime. Question? Okay. So I said something about audit logs being centralized, and could I get some more detail? So audit logs are generated on a machine-by-machine basis. When I talk about centralized, to be fair, I think I said this right, and if I didn't, I apologize. Centralization of audit logs is a feature of things like System Center. System Center goes and pulls audit log data from the machine and centralizes, makes it centrally available for analysis, etc. Good question. So, given the example of classifying files based on a credit card number, what if I take the credit card number out of the file? Then what happens? Well, that depends on your classification rules. If you have a classification rule that only says, mark files that have a credit card in them as high impact, then we'll mark it as high impact. Nothing tells us to go remove that property at a later date. So you would have to have something there that basically removes it or lowers the classification. In that situation. We don't do that by default. at least for the inbox content classification capabilities. Other third parties can do this if they wanted to. Please. Ah, good question. So if you use Active Directory attributes to generate claims, do you have to start wondering about who has write access to those claims? Well, yes, you do. You have to wonder about who has write access to those claims. When it comes to the question of what makes a good claim as an attribute, it's not simply any attribute. There are many attributes that are not well managed, for example, right? Or openly modifiable by anybody. Those things do not make good claims. But it's a good discussion to have, definitely. And I encourage you to go see Brian Poole's session on best practice. He has a whole section on how they selected claims, because we learned a whole bunch from that process. Please. Encryption? Ah, good. So, user's typing away in Office. He types in the credit card number. Autosave kicks in. File's now saved. File gets automatically encrypted. User keeps typing. Autosave happens again. Does he get an error of some sort? What happens? So, in that situation specifically, Office actually simply overwrites the saved file. So the fact that it was encrypted is irrelevant. It would simply overwrite the encrypted file, and the new file would get encrypted again. Now, so the other side is, what if there is a access policy that says this user does not have write permission on files that contain credit card information, high impact, PCI data, whatever? That's a good question. What happens in that situation? That is a potential in theory, right? You could lock yourself out of a file that you're actively working on. Yes, that is possible. This is one of those questions that always comes up. How do you deal well with that? There's no perfect answer here, I'll be honest with you. There is no perfect answer. Because if you create data that you should not have the ability to change, well, think about this. You're creating data about an ongoing legal investigation. Should you now be allowed to change that data? Well, if it falls under legal discovery, officially, no. You shouldn't be able to modify that data. You should be able to create a copy of it, but not modify it, right? So there is no perfect answer here that I can give, at least. How's that? Maybe there is one that somebody else has, and I'd love to hear any ideas if you guys have some, but I don't have an obvious answer right now. Yes, that could happen. Should it happen? In most cases, no. My experience is most people create files on their machine first and then move it to a file server, or update a file on the file server. If they end up with access issues, they create a copy and upload a new copy. That's my experience, and those situations should all work still. Question, please. Ah, good question. Good question. So, country claims. Well, what if you happen to be a member of, you know, the Germany country? You can be only a member of one country. But you really should have access to Germany data and France data, for example. France data, Belgium data, Netherlands data. How do we deal with that? If you can only have one country, that can indeed be a problem. The result of that is, if you need access to multiple things, maybe the country attribute is not the correct place to create the claim from in that situation. Maybe you should have an attribute of authorized to access, right? Something else that's managed well. Maybe you shouldn't be using the inbox country capability. Does that make sense? Okay. Question? Excuse me, one more time. For authoring? Performance. Oh, yes. So are there what's the performance impact, basically, right? That's the question. What is the performance impact with this? So we found in both real-world deployments and testing, the performance impact here is negligible over the existing scenario. Now, there are ways you can make this bad. No question about it, right? Expression-based audit versus audit, about the same. Audit has impact by definition, right? Expression-based access versus access, about the same. You give me an expression with 1,000 comparisons in it, might be a little slower, right? Classification of data takes some time. There's no way that that can be zero, right? You give me a very hard pattern to recognize, something, say, with a factorial time frame based on length of data. Yes, that's going to take a whole bunch of time to classify. In general, though, for real-world usage, we see minimal impact by with the deployment. Question? Ah, great question. Is dynamic access control enabled on REFS? So, partially is the answer. So the most areas where REFS is targeted for this release, so REFS does not have full feature comparability with many things. So, for example, we don't have a quota mechanism on REFS today. We don't have a file screening mechanism on REFS today. Should we have one? I'd like one. Would be nice, you know. I do own quota features. It'd be nice to have them. We don't have them today. The reality is, today we look mostly for application storage, VHD storage, things like that. Those are not primary candidates for dynamic access control either. The data on the VHD is a different question, right? But the VHD itself, not so much. So from a technical point of view, the central access policy can be assigned on a REFS volume. Yes, the ACL system is the same. However, there is no mechanism to classify data on REFS today. So yes, you could. It is not quite as easy as it is on NTFS, and you will have to restrain yourself to groups and claims only. More questions? I ended early. I've never actually managed to end the session early. I am very impressed. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys coming. If you have any more questions, feel free to ask, and please come to the deep dive, and I'll give you more details.